listening to the low hum of the house lights. "Sarab, if something happened to you..." She couldn't complete her sentence. She was aware of Sarab's heaving breaths from across the room. "I lost Maya. I can't lose you as well." Sarab's lip trembled. "Say it to me now," Kulwinda urged silently, but he looked past her. She wondered if he had been lonely when she was away, or relieved not to avoid speaking to her. She could see them drifting further apart, sleeping in separate rooms, politely waiting for each other to vacate the living room before settling in front of the television. Just the thought made her feel terribly lonely, as if it was already happening. "How about Nikki?" Sarab asked. Kulwinda narrowed her eyes. The last thing she wanted to do was talk about Nikki. "What about her?" she said impatiently. "Where does she live?"
"Somewhere in West London."
"Tell her she needs to be careful." Kulwinda thought back to her heated confrontation with Nikki. Not once had she mentioned to Nikki that she might be in danger. Did Juggy know about Nikki's questions? And what if the brothers found out that she was the ringleader of these classes? Kulwinda shook her head to dismiss the thought. Nikki lived outside Southall. There was no need to panic about her safety.
"I don't know where she might be now," Kulwinda said.
"Go to the next class and..."
"I've suspended the classes," Kulwinda said. "I fired Nikki."
Sarab looked up sharply. "Kulwinda, think about the girl," he said. He drew himself away from her. She felt the emptiness of the room as he vacated it, but her indignation remained. It was Nikki who had put them in this situation. If she had just done her job, none of this would have happened. Kulwinda opened the folder. Weeks and weeks of deception were written in these pages. Picking through the folder, she saw that one of the illiterate widows had put her artistic talents to use and filled a page with illustrations. A man hovering over a woman's breast, his mouth slightly open to capture her nipple. A woman straddling a man, the crease down her spine to her buttock defined to show the slight arching of her back. Filth. Kulwinda tossed the papers back into the folder and went into the kitchen to make some tea. She poured the water into the pot. While waiting for it to heat up, she couldn't help thinking about the angles of the man's body as he crouched over the woman. She shook her head and focused on the pot. Tiny bubbles were beginning to surface on the water. She crossed to the spice cabinet and took out the fennel and cardamom seeds, and there again, she paused and shut her eyes. Spots of light danced around as her vision adjusted to the darkness. Then instead of disappearing, the spots took shape. A man. A woman. Fingers skillfully gliding across bare skin. Red lips pressing into glistening flesh. Her eyes flew open. She went to the stove and took the pot off. She glanced at the folder. She supposed there was no harm in reading one story, just to review the information. After all, if she were to be questioned by the council over this, she needed to have all the details. Kulwinda picked out the first story. The Tailor. Centuries ago, on the fringes of a palace city, there was a talented but modest tailor named Ram. Ram's customers were women who wanted to look like the royals who lived within the palace walls. These women travelled for miles to see Ram, carrying with them a list of seemingly impossible demands. It was said that Ram had a gift for putting together the most regal and fashionable creations out of nothing. He could spin a simple yellow thread into gold and turn an ordinary pale green into the rich emerald shade of a rare jewel. Many of Ram's customers were enamored with him. They noticed the way he handled his modest sewing machine, his fingers deftly moving between layers of cloth, and they drew conclusions about what a talented man he must be between the sheets. During fittings, some women purposely loosened their top garments and leaned forward to give him a sneak peek at their cleavage. Some left a gap in the curtain of the changing space to give Ram a chance to peek. Ram paid no attention. While working, he preferred not to be distracted by temptations. One day he would have time for a lover, but for now there were too many orders. Word had spread all over India that Ram was the best tailor. The popular rhyme went, "The tailor Ram is the best in town. You'll feel like a royal in a fancy gown. His prices are good, his prices are fair. You'll be a queen with a crown in her hair." But for every piece of praise Ram received, there was also a curse. Jealous tailors all over India were furious with him for luring their clients away with his magical skills. Ordinary men cursed him for catering to the demands of their wives, who, when wearing such fine saris, expected royal treatment. One afternoon, a woman came to Ram asking for his help. Her hazel eyes made Ram's heart skip. "For once, I would like to look like a rich woman," she told him in a voice that he wanted to hear whispering in his ear. She handed him an old shawl. "I can't afford to buy something new, but can you stitch a border onto this?" "Of course," Ram said. "For you, I would do anything," he thought. "Your husband must have bought this for you." The woman smiled and tucked a stray hair behind her ear. "I have no husband," she said to Ram's delight. This beautiful woman was fit to look like a queen. Ram decided that he would not accept any payment for her when the shawl was completed. All he wanted was a chance at another conversation so he could find out her name. Ram's passion for the woman ignited his creativity. He blended dyes to create threads of the most brilliant colors to impress her. The border of the shawl would be lined with a parade of turquoise and magenta peacocks. In the center of the border, Ram would embroider a replica of the palace with a minuscule image of the woman standing in one of its windows. He would point it out to her, this secret, so she would know that she was his queen. A scene with this level of detail required Ram's fullest concentration. He was so focused that he dismissed the voices of the children playing outside. It was only when he heard his name that he stopped working and paid attention. "The tailor Ram is the best in town. You'll look like a princess in a fancy gown. His prices are good, his prices are fair, but he'll never be part of a loving pair." This was the worst curse in existence because it banished its victim to a lifetime of loneliness. Ram ran outside. "Where did you hear that?" Ram asked. The children scattered. Ram chased them up the street before he realized that he was still holding the shawl. It was ripped and covered in mud from being dragged along the ground. "Oh no," Ram cried out. He returned to his shop and tried his best to repair the shawl, but it was ruined. That evening, when the woman returned to check on his progress, Ram hung his head in shame and said that he had lost the shawl. The woman was outraged. Gone was the warmth from her hazel eyes. "How could you do this?" she screamed. "You're the worst tailor in the world." Ram closed his shop the next day. He wept at his workstation, seeing the curse darkening his future like a storm cloud. He had never wished for anything before, but now he wished for a chance at intimacy. "Why didn't I bed a woman when I had the chance?" he asked himself. He went to sleep, dreaming of the milky thighs of the customers who had bared their bodies to him. In his dreams, he was bold enough to bury his face in their bosoms and breathe in their sweet scent. In another dream, Ram saw himself bent over a woman, kissing her plump lips as she stroked his manhood with one hand and tickled her own private parts with the other. Suddenly, Ram woke to a rustling noise. A burglar.
Ram leapt out of bed and rushed to his storage room first. Nobody was there. The rustling noise started again. Ram shone his lamp in the direction of the noise and noticed that his fabric was moving. He picked it up and noticed that it was heavier than usual, almost solid. He brought it to his workstation to see it in a better light. The fabric twisted away from his grip and fell to the floor. Its shape shifted in waves until a woman fully emerged. Ram staggered back against the wall, staring at this ghostly thing in his home.
What are you?
He stammered. She had the sorts of eyelids that swept as dramatically as butterfly wings each time she blinked. Her skin had a golden hue, and her shimmering hair let off the sweet scent of jasmine. The curves of her body were very arousing. She followed his gaze across her chest and reached for him. Her touch was soft. Her fingers, now fully formed, ran along her body to show him that she was real. She drew attention to parts of the body that Ram had never had to consider as a tailor. The bone jutting from her collar, the sharp edge of her elbow. Her toenails were curved and white, like half moons. Her belly button was a dark crater in the golden desert of her body. Ram reached out to clutch a handful of flesh above her hip. It was as real as his own. "Call me Layla," she said. She put her lips to his earlobe and sucked it gently. Shivers of delight ran through Ram like an electric current. He ran his hands down her back and grabbed her buttocks, drawing their hips together as they fell back against the bed of fabric. She unwound the loose cloth that covered the top of her body and exposed her breasts to Ram. Ram flicked his tongue against a dark nipple. Layla gasped with pleasure, grinding herself against him. Ram switched to the other breast. She tasted salty and musky, the way he could never have imagined. Daringly, he brought his fingers to her mouth. She licked and sucked on them. Ram's manhood throbbed with anticipation of what Layla's sweet, silky mouth might do for him. His fingers were slick with saliva when he pulled them away from Layla's lips and into the silky crevice between her legs.
"You're so real," Ram uttered.
Layla spread her legs wider and allowed Ram to stroke her. The fabric beneath her darkened with shadows of sweat. With both thumbs, Ram gently parted the folds of her womanhood and used the tip of his tongue to tickle her protruding button. Layla's giggle turned him on even more. She rolled over him, pulling off his pants fiercely. His manhood was stiff. Layla teased him. She brushed her wetness against the tip of his manhood and watched his face contort with pleasure.
"How does that feel?"
she breathed into his ear. Her breasts dangled over his lips. He replied with a groan. "That's not a proper answer," Layla said sternly. With a scowl, she lowered herself onto him and began riding vigorously on his hard, thick stick. The angry look on Layla's face was the only remnant of the punishing nature of the curse. Ram gave Layla's bottom a hard squeeze. Her scowl deepened. "How dare you?" she asked. He gritted his teeth, the tension building inside him. He felt Layla's muscles clenching at the same time as his. She cried out his name and let out a long, shuddering moan. Witnessing Layla's ultimate pleasure triggered Ram's quick, hot release. He grabbed her hips and moaned loudly. Layla's body was slick with sweat. She continued to rock slowly on his stick as tiny aftershocks sent quivers through his body. As they lay together, Layla explained that she had been created from Ram's wishes to be with a woman. The curse had been no match against the strength of his desires.
aware that wishes, just like curses, have a lifespan, Ram asked Leela how long they would be together. As long as these rolls of fabric, Leela said. They looked around. The fabric had unspooled and spilled across Ram's modest studio. Rich, fiery hues of orange and dazzling silver threads stretched as far as they could see. Corwinda's tea was cold. She barely noticed it as she brought the cup to her lips and gulped it down. Her face, her hands and feet felt very warm, almost hot. She could feel the pulsing of her heart, and another pulsing in a very private place. There was a faint recollection of this feeling, from many years ago when she first discovered what it was that men and women did, and why they did it. Her earlier appalled facade forgotten, she was enthralled. She even dared to think that it was worth living the rest of her life for this closeness with another human being. She put the story back into the folder and pulled out another one. This was by Jasbir Kaur, a widow who lived in South London. Corwinda had attended the engagement party of her grandson a few years back. She began reading Jasbir's story and felt the blood surging through her body with such urgency that she had to put it down. She stood up and left the cup of tea on the table. A wave of energy swept over her and carried her up the stairs. Lying on the bed, Sarab was staring at the ceiling. Corwinda took his hand and laid it gently on her breast. He stared at her in confusion at first, and then he understood. Nikki knew without ever having had the experience that she would be pretty hopeless in a fight. A wrestling scenario played in her mind, and immediately she saw herself being pinned to the ground by one of Coolwinder's meaty arms. She winced. Even in a fantasy, she was losing. She would have to use her wits. The story, she would explain, had never been intended to make a mockery of the classes or of Coolwinder. The stories were inspired by the women, and yes, they were raunchy, but weren't they learning language all the same? If these tactics didn't work, Nikki would just grab the folder and leave. For this scenario to work, the folder would have to be within reach, of course. It occurred to her with a pang that Corwinda might have already tossed the stories out in the rubbish. The night breeze picked up and rustled through the trees. On the main road, the headlights of cars shone intensely, like eyes. Nikki turned to a side street and walked briskly to warm herself. At night, the houses seemed to crouch together behind dim patches of porch lights. Nikki's phone buzzed in her pocket, a text from Sheena.
Older women still want to meet regularly. Can you think of a place?
One problem at a time, Nikki thought, shoving the phone back into her pocket. In Coolwinder's living room, the television flashed like a siren against the windows, which had curtains only partly drawn. Nikki rang the doorbell and waited, but nobody came. She tried again and then peered into the window. She could see into the whole bottom story from here. She squinted at the kitchen. Lights on, a steel teapot and matching cup on the table, but no one in sight. Nikki shivered from the cold. The rain was getting heavier now. She tugged the hood of her jacket around her head. Opposite Corwinda's lit house, Dharampal's home was completely dark. Nikki crossed the road and hesitated on the edge of Dharampal's driveway. She was hoping for a better view of Corwinda's house, but she would have to go closer to Dharampal's porch. It was clear that nobody was home, but this was only a small comfort. The house still loomed menacingly, its gaping windows like blackened eyes. She forced herself forward. At least the awning on the porch provided some shelter from the rain. On the second level of Coolwinder's house, Nikki could see that the dim bedroom lights were on. She squinted, searching for more. At one point she saw she thought a shadow crossing the window, but it could have easily been a sheet of rain being carried by a strong gust. What am I doing here? The question struck Nikki as the awning rattled with the thrum of rainfall. Even if she knocked on the door and Coolwinder answered it, What were her chances that Gulwinder would calmly return the stories? The pages didn't really matter. The women could retell them. There were recordings. What Nikki wanted to do was talk to Gulwinder, explain how the stories came about, compel her to see that these women who had started one quiet rebellion could come together to fight a bigger injustice. Her heart and mind were still racing from her discovery about Juggy's handwriting. She just needed to convince Gulwinder that the case was worth pursuing. Nikki ducked out from under the awning and made her way back to the main road. She wouldn't confront Gulwinder today. It was too soon. Let her cool off. This was probably what she was doing now. On the main road, Nikki made a left towards the station. Her satchel swung against her hip without the usual weight of the stories. The windows of houses shone with a warm and familiar light. Nikki felt an ache for home. As the rain pelted down, she recalled the long walks through the city after quitting university, her face wet with rain and tears. She had entered O'Reilly's on a particularly wet afternoon, so grateful to belong somewhere, to be hidden. Nikki stopped in her tracks. The pub. The widows could continue their meetings in the back room. She strode quickly through the rain and pulled out her phone. Sheena, I found us a place to move the story classes. O'Reilly's where I work. It's quite empty on weekday evenings. You want those old Punjabi widows to meet in a pub? I know it's a bit unorthodox, but I'm picturing it now. I am as well, Nikki said. Her vision switched between a scandalized Preetham refusing to enter and a drunk Arvinda swinging from the chandeliers. But listen, Sheena, once we get the story started, they won't notice where they are. The important thing is to keep meeting. It can be a temporary place until we find a better solution. I could drive a few of the older women, Sheena said. I could find a friend to take some others and give them directions. You tell me where it is and I'll sort it out. You sure you don't mind? No problem, Sheena said. Another thing, Nikki said. She paused. Sheena was not going to like this. There might be a way to incriminate Juggy. Hi, Nikki. Just listen. Nikki rushed to explain the smudged registration form before Sheena could protest. What did Gulwinder say? Sheena asked when Nikki was finished. She didn't want to hear it, Nikki said. I think she was too caught up in a shock and anger about the classes. I'm still in Southall at the moment. I thought of going to her house, but I've decided to give her some distance. If you're near Gulwinder's house, you're not far from mine. Do you want to come over? It's really pouring out there. That will be nice, Nikki said. I'm on Queen Mary Road. There's a bus stop here and a little park across the road. Okay. Oh, I can see you now. Where are you? Nikki squinted. Through the rain, she could see the outlines of people in their homes, but no specific view of Sheena. I'm across the road. I live near the park, but Nikki, don't stop. Keep walking quickly. What's going on? Just go straight and make a left at the next junction. Nikki felt a dreadful prickling sensation, and from the corner of her eye she noticed a shadow. I'm being followed, she whispered. Yes, Sheena confirmed. Who is it, can you tell? It might be one of the brothers, Sheena said. I'm going to turn around and say something. Don't be stupid, Sheena hissed. Her tone startled Nikki. Keep walking, stay calm. There's a 24-hour supermarket. Go to the car park and wait for me. I'll come and get you. No, Sheena, I'll be fine. Nikki! Nikki hung up. Her stalker would recognize Sheena's little red car. Being on foot was an advantage. She picked up her pace, her breath caught in her throat. She could hear the person behind her, not slowing down, not turning. He was waiting to see where she would go. She dropped back to a casual pace, her eyes darting left and right to keep track of the shadow. She crossed the road to the supermarket and took refuge in the white open expanse of the car park. Only then did she dare to glance over her shoulder. A young Punjabi man was staring intently at her. Nikki matched his stare with all the calmness she could muster while her heartbeat thrashed in her ears. Eventually, he walked away, but not without casting a menacing look at Nicky over his shoulder. Chapter 13. Corwinda woke. She sat upright. The duvet fell away from her, revealing her naked body. She gasped and pulled the sheet up, tightening it across her chest and tucking it beneath her armpits. Sinking back into bed, she noticed the coolness of it against her bottom, her calves. She recalled the events of last night as she spotted her clothes tossed around the room carelessly. Her salwar hanging from the corner of the ironing board, her top crumpled in the corner, her pants, scrunched into a ball on the dresser and slowly unfurling. She closed her eyes in embarrassment.
Oh, what have we done? She thought,
behaving like gore, getting carried away in their excitement. They had wrapped themselves around each other last night like giddy lovers, moving up and down, left and right, twisting even. Where had it come from? The stories had provided no instructions, but they had known anyway how to bring each other to such heat. The thought of it sent shocks through Kulvinda's body, and then she was overcome by a wave of shame. But why? She was startled by the question, uttered so clearly that it broke the silence in the room. Why was she ashamed? Because she was supposed to be. Because women, especially at her age, did not ask for these sorts of pleasures. She blushed, thinking of the uninhibited moans that escaped her mouth, from every part of her body, it seemed, as she drew Sarab in closer and closer. What if the neighbours heard? It had not even occurred to her last night. Sarab's side of the bed was empty, as usual. He was always awake before her. His morning routine involved showering and then sitting in the living room with his newspaper. What was he thinking of her now? He was probably wondering what happened, what had inspired her to reach out for him like that. Worse, he would think that there was something wrong with her. He would think that she liked it, couldn't get enough of it. That would be humiliating, disgraceful. Why? Well, Corvind thought, he had liked it too, hadn't he? She recalled his grunts, his gasps of surprise. If he enjoyed it, then who was he to complain or ask her why it happened? Sarab, Corwinda called out. It was best to settle this now, to explain to him that last night's behaviour was a response to those stories, nothing else, a moment of weakness. They did not have to discuss it any further. There was no answer. She called out for him again. Nothing. Swinging her legs over the edge of the bed, Corwinda held the sheet taut against her breasts, leaned out of the door and bellowed her husband's name. He called back. I'm in the kitchen, he said. Curious, Corwinda scurried around the room finding her clothes. As she descended the stairs, she could make out faint sweet spices in the air. She sniffed her way to the kitchen and found Sarab standing at the stove, a pot bubbling in front of him. Black leaves and spices bubbled to the surface in a soupy mixture. Too thick, Corwinda immediately noticed, but she was too surprised to say anything. Since when did you start making tea around here? She asked. You've made it every morning, for the last 27 years, Sarab replied. He stirred a spoon through the mixture. I've seen you do it countless times. I'd like to think I know how to make a cup of chai. Corwinda stepped up to the stove and turned it off. You're burning it, she said. Sit down and I'll make you a new pot. Sarab lingered on the spot and watched her pour the leaves out to start again. She looked up to see him smiling at her. What? She asked irritably, her glance darting away. He reached out and gently tipped her face towards his. Their eyes met, and her lips twitched. The laughter that they shared filled the room, a shot of intoxicating warmth, like the first hint of summer. When they stopped laughing, they started again, and they noticed that they were both crying as well. They wiped each other's tears away. Those stories, Sarab gasped. Those stories. He was delighted.
Chapter 14. A ghostly mist floated between the parked cars and trees as Nikki walked briskly to the supermarket for her weekly shopping, hiding her face in the fleece-lined collar of her jacket. As she was about to leave the store, her phone buzzed in her pocket.
Hey, Nin, what's going on? Listen, I was just having lunch with the girls, and Curtis' fiancée is here. Oh, did I tell you she's already engaged to a guy she met at speed dating?
Nope, Nikki said. Congratulations to her. She began walking briskly back to her flat, scrunching her face against a spray of rain.
But I called to ask you something. Curtis' fiancée Siraj was saying there's a class being offered in the temple at Southall for old Bibis, some sort of sex ed course.
Nikki nearly dropped the phone.
Sex ed? I told him, my sister teaches English classes there, and if there was such a thing, I'd know all about it. Can you imagine? A sex ed class for old Punjabi ladies. Oh, hang on, I'll put you on the phone to him.
Wait, Nikki said. I don't want to talk to him.
Where did he hear that?
He said he heard it from some friends. Men can be worse gossips than women.
What sort of friends? Nikki asked.
I don't know. Oh, don't worry, Nikki, nobody believes it. It's not going to affect the reputation of your English classes if you're worried about that. Who would believe that a bunch of old Bibis would be sitting around talking about sex?
Nikki couldn't help feeling protective over the widows. A fierce and sudden wind ripped through the air and sent Nikki's hair flying in all directions.
You can tell Siraj that he's wrong, Nikki said.
You're wrong, Siraj, Mindy called. My source is confirming it.
In the background, Nikki could hear the irritating cooing of Curtie's voice.
Ah, darling, it was a good story, though, isn't it?
Tell Siraj that my students write erotic stories. They don't need sex education. They're very well versed in what goes on in the bedroom. They have wisdom which comes with age and experience, Nikki continued. There was a long silence from Mindy. Nikki could hear the background noise of the restaurant fading away.
Say that all again. I couldn't hear very well in there, so I've gone outside.
You heard me fine, Nikki said.
Nikki, are you serious? You're running those classes.
I wouldn't call them classes. They're more like sharing sessions.
For old women to share what?
Sex tips?
Fantasies, Nikki said.
There was a sound that Nikki would have mistaken for a shriek of glee if she didn't know her sister better. Nikki stopped mid-pace, letting her shopping bag slip from her wrists to the pavement.
Mindy?
She asked uncertainly. Laughter, raw and wild, poured down the phone line.
I can't believe it! The old Bibis of Southall are writing erotic stories!
You're finding this funny? Nikki asked.
Mindy, are you drunk?
Mindy giggled and her voice dropped to a whisper.
Oh, Nix, I wouldn't normally, but we had a little bit of champagne at lunch to celebrate the engagement. I felt like I had to drink just to mute the sound of Siraj's voice. He's a nice guy, but he's very loud. When he was telling us about the classes, I felt the whole restaurant turning to look at us.
Where did he hear the rumour from?
I told you, some friends.
Do you have any names specifically? Could you find out?
I did ask before, but Siraj was very vague. Oh, just people I know. That's why I thought it was all completely made up. I could ask him again.
No, don't, Nikki said, changing her mind. She didn't know this Siraj, and she didn't want it getting back to his friends, however remotely connected they might be to the brothers, that she was searching for them.
Mindy, I should go, Nikki said. I'm just walking home from the shops. I'll call you back later.
No, Mindy moaned. I have so many questions for you about these classes. Plus, I have something to tell you. I'm seeing someone. I want to talk to you about him. I think he's the one.
That's great, Mindy. Does Mum know?
She's acting funny about it.
Funny how? Has she met him?
Not yet. It's still really new. She's just been in a mood lately. She doesn't want me to get married because then she'll be all alone in the house with nobody to talk to.
I'm sure she doesn't feel that way.
She does. She said so.
She went, Nikki left, now you're in a haste to leave as well. What am I supposed to do?
She'll have her freedom, Nikki said. But then she thought about it. Mum would be completely alone, with nobody to talk with, nobody to fill the long evening silences. Mindy hiccuped.
Maybe we should chat when you're sober, Nikki said.
That's the kind of thing I would say to you.
Not anymore, you drunkard. Mindy giggled and hung up.
In the early evening, Nikki left her flat for the pub, her satchel slung around her waist, noticeably lighter without the women's stories. She was still smiling from a conversation with Mindy in the afternoon. When Nikki turned the corner, her smile vanished. Jason was standing in the pub's entrance.
Nikki, Jason said, I am so sorry.
Without a word, Nikki breezed past him. He followed her to the door.
Please, Nikki. Go away, Jason. I'm busy. I want to talk to you.
That's nice. Do I get any say in when we get to talk?
I couldn't come that day. I should have called, but...
Look, my mind is completely muddled and...
And you've forgotten basic manners, Nikki snapped. You could have texted. It takes 10 seconds.
I wanted to speak to you in person.
I'm so sorry, Nikki. I came here to talk to you, to apologize.
Nikki entered the pub, but sneaked a glance at Jason's face. He looked more tired than sorry. Nikki felt herself relenting, but she didn't want to.
What did you want to talk about? She asked crossly. It's really a sit-down sort of conversation, Jason began.
I'm busy right now. Sheena told my class to be here at 7.
The riding class women, they're meeting here?
Nikki nodded.
What happened to the community center? Jason asked.
Corwinda discovered what was really going on and she cancelled the classes. I was effectively fired.
How did she find out?
She walked into a class and heard everything. We had lots of new members and we weren't being careful enough. Anyway, it's a long story and I don't want to get into it right now. Sheena's driving them over and they're due any minute.
Can we meet after your class is finished? I'll come over.
I've got a lot on my mind at the moment, and clearly you do as well.
I'd like a chance to explain myself to you, Jason said, if you'll just hear me out. Just tell me when and where to meet you, and I'll be there.
Just one chance, Nikki said. 9:30, my place.
I'll be there.
Nikki raised an eyebrow.
I'll be there. Jason repeated firmly.
The first few women appeared nearly 45 minutes after the start time. They stood tentatively in the doorway and peered in, their faces scrunched up with distaste. Sheena pushed through.
That was hard bloody work, she muttered to Nikki. Once they figured out I was taking them out of Southall, they started asking all these questions. Where exactly are we going? Which part of London? I don't recognise that sign. Where are we?
I finally pulled over and I said, we're going to Nikki's pub, all right? If you don't want to go, you can get out here and take the bus home.
And?
They all stayed, Sheena said. They were too scared. Preetham started praying loudly.
Nikki approached the doorway.
It's me, ladies, she smiled. It's so lovely that you made it.
Arvinda, Preetham, Bibi and Tanveer huddled together and stared.
Is this everyone? Nikki whispered to Sheena. There was another car of women following me, but they may have got lost, Sheena said, checking a phone. Or maybe they decided to turn around.
Come in, Nikki said. The weather's taken another turn for the worst, hasn't it? It's warm and cozy inside.
The widow's silence rattled Nikki's confidence. This was going to be harder than she thought.
We serve soft drinks and juice, she said.
The women did not budge.
And chai, she said.
This was an exaggeration. They had Earl Grey, but she could throw in some milk and cinnamon.
Bibi's expression brightened slightly.
Nikki noticed that she was rubbing her hands together.
It's cold out here, Nikki said.
She gave an exaggerated shudder.
Why don't you come in and have a warm drink?
No, Preetham said, just as Bibi took a tentative step forward.
This is not a place for Punjabi women. We don't belong here.
I live here, Nikki said, in the flat upstairs. She felt a fierce and sudden pride in this decrepit pub. I've worked here for over 2 years.
If we go inside, people will stare at us, Tanvir said. That's what Preetam means. It'll be like when we first arrived in London. They'll see us in our salwar kameez and they'll be thinking, go back to where you came from.
They used to say it, Bibi said. Now it's not so common, but we can still see it in their eyes.
Arvinda shifted uncomfortably from one foot to the other. Nikki took her pinched expression as agreement.
You're all afraid, I know, Nikki said. I'm very sorry that people have been unkind to you, but I chose this pub especially because it's a kind of place where everybody is welcome.
Bibi continued, rubbing her hands.
What if they make us drink beer?
Nobody can force you to drink beer, Nikki said. What if they pour the alcohol into our tea while we're not looking, hmm?
Bibi asked. I'll watch very closely to make sure it does not happen, Nikki assured her. Suddenly, Arvinda pushed past the women and entered the pub. Nikki was just about to feel proud of her persuasive skills when she heard Arvinda's loud, broken English.
Excuse me, please. Toilet where?
I told her not to drink all of that water before we left, Preetam grumbled. She kept complaining about how dry her throat was.
Tanvir coughed.
I think she's catching my bug, she said. Nikki, did you say there was tea?
Yes.
I would like some, please, Tanvir said.
She wrapped her arms around Bibi's frail shoulders and rubbed them vigorously.
Come, Bibi, you can warm up inside.
Both women shot apologetic glances at Preetam as they ducked into the pub. It was just Preetam left.
Hi, hi, she whispered. I've been betrayed.
It wasn't clear if Preetam was addressing Nikki or some invisible audience.
There's a television inside, Nikki said. So? There are some good English soap operas on.
Preetam turned up her nose at this idea.
I won't understand them.
You're very good at making up stories based on what's happening on the screen, though, Nikki reminded her.
Why don't you come in and do that? The other women love your tales.
It probably signified nothing, but Preetam hesitated for a moment before she said,
No.
Nikki sighed.
You're all right with waiting for us out here, then? We might be a while.
Preetam adjusted her dupatta.
That's fine, she said stiffly.
Suit yourself, Nikki said. Inside the pub, the widows had gathered by the table closest to the entrance. They were right about being stared at. The few customers and bar staff looked at them with mixed expressions of amusement and curiosity.
Why don't we find a quiet corner?
Nikki suggested, leading the way to the back room, which was actually just a less popular part of the main area. Arvinda, Bibi and Tanvir shuffled along silently, clutching their bags tightly. They settled around a long table far from the other customers. Above them, there was a window facing the pavement. Preetam's feet shifted into view and then disappeared. Nikki noticed Arvinda watching her.
Shall I try to get her inside?
Nikki asked.
Nah, Arvinda said. Let her get to know your neighbourhood.
Bibi looked around.
Does it have to be so dark? Why do these gore all like to come into these dark caves to do their drinking?
It's not just white people who come into this place, Nikki said. I've served drinks to Indians here as well. I had a bit of whiskey once, just the bottom of my husband's glass. I was having a very bad cold, and he said it would soothe my sinuses, but it was terrible. It burned my throat, Tanvir said. I used to drink wine with my husband, said Sheena. The doctor told my husband it was a healthy alternative to drinking beer all the time, and that he could have one or two glasses at night. I started drinking it with him.
The doctor recommended this? Bibi asked. An English doctor, I'm sure.
Sheena shrugged.
Yeah, it wasn't my first time drinking alcohol. I used to go after work drinks with my colleagues when I worked in central London.
Nikki's phone pinged in her pocket. She opened a message from an unknown number. Hey, Nikki. Once again, I'm so sorry. I'll explain everything tonight. Jason. Nikki looked up. The women were now bickering over whether Sheena's doctor should be jailed for recommending wine instead of medicine. Nikki glanced out of the window. Who was that talking to Preetham?
A man in a familiar pair of slacks whose face was blocked by the bus stop sign. Preetham shooed him away with a wave of her dupatta.
Get away from me, you idiot!
She shrieked suddenly. Nikki shot up from her seat and ran outside. It was Steve with the racist grandfather.
Namaste, he said with a grin and a wave. I was just trying to direct this lady back to the Tandoor Express. Go home, Steve. You're banned from the pub. I can still hang around outside, Steve said.
He turned to Preetham and dipped forward in a deep bow.
Chicken tikka masala, he said solemnly.
Preetham turned on her heels and marched right into the pub. When Nikki caught up with her, she said,
Hi, anything is better than standing outside in the cold with that lunatic.
Nikki laughed and gave her a hug. I'm so glad you've decided to join us, she said, steering Preetham towards the group. The widows cheered when they saw her, and she blushed and waved.
Who has a story to share? Nikki asked.
A moment passed, and then one tentative hand appeared, Bibi.
I thought of mine on the way here, she said.
Go on, Nikki said. She relaxed into her chair.
The woman who loved to ride horses, Bibi said.
The women broke into giggles.
Did she also like to ride rickshaws on particularly bumpy roads, eh?
And lean against the washing machine while it was on the vigorous spin cycle.
Quiet, Bibi commanded. I'm trying to tell my story.
She cleared her throat and started again.
The woman who loved to ride horses. Once upon a time, there was a woman who lived on a large plot of land. Her late father had passed it down to her and had given her instructions. Don't marry anybody who is money-minded, because he will try to transfer ownership of the land.
All of the women were attentive except Sheena, who slumped into her seat next to Nikki.
Do you want me to help with the tea? Nikki asked quietly.
Sheena nodded. They excused themselves and headed to the bar. Nikki prepared a tray of cups and put the kettle on.
Would you like something to drink? Nikki asked.
Some wine would be nice, Sheena said.
She threw a look over her shoulder. The widows were too engrossed in Bibi's story to notice their absence, much less the wine that Nikki poured for Sheena.
You look tired. Is everything okay?
Just a hectic day at work without enough sleep last night. I was up till late talking to Rahul, Sheena said. I told him that things were moving too quickly.
How did he take it? Nikki asked.
Eventually he was all right. We had a long conversation, but his initial reaction surprised me. He became defensive. He said, But you're enjoying it.
So he thought you were accusing him of disrespecting you?
Yeah. I said, Just because I like it doesn't mean I can't change my mind and decide to take things slow, all right? And this look crossed his face. It was like he was taken aback, but also impressed.
You gave him something to think about.
The funny thing is, I was surprised as well. I didn't realize what I wanted to say until I said it. That's why I avoided talking to him in the first place.
Sheena took a few sips of her wine and sneaked another quick look at the widows.
These storytelling sessions are good fun, but I think I've also learned to speak up for what I want. Exactly what I want.
Nikki remembered the unexpected rush of confidence she felt when she stood up to Gary and Victor.
Me too, she said, and I didn't think I needed any help in that department.
They exchanged a smile. At that moment, Nikki felt an overwhelming sense of gratitude for Sheena's friendship. They returned to the widows after Sheena finished her drink, and Nikki handed out cups of tea.
Bibi's gaze had gone dreamy as she built her story.
Straddled on the back of this magnificent stallion, she commanded his every move. His muscles moved steadily beneath her, grinding against her most intimate places.
Bibi's narration was interrupted by the arrival of another pair of Punjabi women. They looked out of breath and were so relieved to have a seat that they didn't seem to mind being inside the pub.
I'm Rupinder, one woman said.
I'm Jyoti, said the other. Manjinder's coming too. She's just finding a place to park.
We were right behind the rest of you,
Rupinder Kaur said,
But Jyoti here spotted someone she recognized, and we had to pull over a little side street and duck down while she tried to figure out if it was him.
Ooh, who was? A secret lover?
Tanveer teased.
Rubbish, Jyoti said. It was Ajmal Kaur's nephew.
Of course, the women had a radar for detecting members of the community, even when they were outside Southall. Arvinda caught Nikki's smile.
You know him? She asked.
No, Nikki said.
Better that you don't. He was smoking a cigarette, Jyoti said.
The women tusked.
Oh, here we go again, Sheena said in English, rolling her eyes at Nikki.
Smoking, Arvinda Kaur said. He doesn't strike me as the type. I've seen him at the temple a few times.
He's got respectable parents as well. Remember his wedding? There wasn't anything like it.
A very lavish wedding, Tanveer said. Both bride and groom were firstborns. The celebrations were a week long.
I heard there are problems in that marriage, by the way. My daughter works closely with the wife's family neighbours. They say she's moved back in with her parents. That's why I was surprised to see him. I thought he would have gone home as well, but I guess he stayed to work things out,
Jyoti said.
Where is he from again? Arvinda said. His family's from Canada, no?
California, Tanveer said. There was a misunderstanding, remember? The girl's father said, my daughter is marrying an American, and everybody thought he was a Gora.
They thought so because his name doesn't sound Punjabi, Preetam said. It's Jason.
Something seized Nikki.
Jason? She repeated. The women nodded. Such a pretty bride, no? And the mehndi was so dark on her light skin. Everybody was teasing her, saying, this means your husband will be wealthy. This means that your mother-in-law will be kind, Preetam said.
Nikki excused herself to the ladies and pulled out her phone once she was out of the widow's view. She felt as if her insides had been scooped out. Jason is married. He was married all along. Two forces of temptation pulled her in opposing directions. To call him and tell him what a bastard he was. To block his number and let him spend the rest of his life wondering how she figured it out. A silent reel of recent memories played on a loop in Nikki's mind. She saw herself kissing him, in bed with him, while his wife wrung her hands in another corner of London. She had never felt so foolish before. Finally, she sent a response to his message. Don't bother coming over. We're done. Without hesitating, she pressed send.
Chapter 15.
Corwinda's phone was buzzing on the countertop where she'd left it. When she noticed the unfamiliar number, she felt a flash of anxiety. She picked it up just before it rang out, but did not say anything.
Hello?
It was Gurtaj Singh.
Sat Sri Akal,
she said with relief. He greeted her back hastily and then said,
I take it that your writing classes went over time today.
She glanced at the clock. It was 9:15, not that the women would be in the classroom anyway. She had locked the door.
The classes aren't running,
she stopped herself from saying any more.
Today,
she said instead.
Are you telling me that the lights have been on since the last lesson?
Gurtaj asked.
The lights? I was driving past the temple after dinner out tonight, and I noticed the light in the windows. You do realize, don't you, that money will have to come out of the budget to pay those electricity bills?
Corwinda pulled the phone away from her ear, so Gurtaj's complaints became distant. She recalled shutting the room doors and locking them, and before that, as always, turning off the lights. Or had she forgotten? It was possible that she'd been so enraged that she had left the lights on. Doubt rollicked in her stomach like a wave. Something was not right.
I'll go back in and turn off the lights, she said. No need to leave your house in the middle of the night, Gurtaj said.
Did he just call to have a go at her then?
I never said I was at home,
Corwinda replied. She left a question as to where she was and what she was doing, and pictured the surprise on Gurdaj's face. Corwinda marched briskly to the temple, her handbag tucked under her arm and her legs taking lengthy strides. It occurred to her that she might be followed again, but she felt her brazenness from earlier flowing through her blood. Sikhs are warriors, she remembered telling a very young Maya,
whose eyes glowed with this knowledge, frightening Kulwinder.
But girls must act like girls, she had added.
Since Maya's death, Kulwinder had only allowed herself to feel the absence as short, shocking sparks. Now they had ignited something, and Kulwinder felt she could breathe fire on anybody who crossed her. All of the windows were black with night except the classroom and Kulwinder's office. She felt a twist of fear but pushed on until she reached the third floor corridor.
Hello,
she called out, taking measured steps towards the door. There was no response. The light glared through the small window in the door. With a gasp, Kulwinder saw the damage first. The room seemed upside down. The tables and chairs lay toppled and helpless, their legs sticking up in the air. Papers were strewn in every direction, and streaks of red spray paint crudely marked the blackboard and the floor. Kulwinder clutched the fabric of her blouse, because this was the closest she could get to her heart. She hurried to her office. The vandals had done the same work here, turning over every surface, ruining the order of her work. The file folders had been tossed to the floor, and one window bashed through. There was the sudden slap of approaching footsteps. Kulwinder scurried through the door into her office and searched wildly for a place to hide. The footsteps became louder. Kulwinder picked up the heaviest thing she could find, an office stapler, and clutched it with both hands. The footsteps stopped, and a woman appeared in the doorway, wearing a midnight blue tunic with a silver chain-stitched border. This woman looked both familiar and strange.
What happened here?
The woman asked, staring at the mess. Then Kulwinder recognized Manjeet Kaur. Kulwinder hadn't seen her out of widow's clothes in the last year.
Somebody!
Kulwinder gestured helplessly at the mess. She had no more words.
Where are the other women? Manjeet asked. I've been away, but I returned to Southall today. I could see the classroom light on from my house, and I walked over to give them a surprise. They're not meeting here anymore. I cancelled the classes.
Oh-ho, you found out then. Still numb with shock, Kulwinder continued to survey the mess. The tidy desk at which she always sat with such pride had been gutted. One drawer hung open lewdly, like a tongue.
I guess we should start cleaning up the place, Kulwinder said. Absolutely not, Manjeet replied. I started my day with leaving my husband. I'm not going to end it with cleaning up after another man.
Kulwinder looked up in surprise.
Your husband? I thought he was...
Manjeet shook her head.
He left me. Then he wanted me back. I went to him thinking it was my duty, but all he wanted was somebody to cook and clean after his new wife ran off. Once I realized it, I packed my bags and came home. The whole journey on the train, every time I felt anxious about what I had done, I just remembered that the other widows and Nikki would be cheering me on.
Kulwinder felt a pang of regret.
This wouldn't have happened if the women had been in this building. I shouldn't have sent them away.
Manjeet stepped over the papers and put her arm around Kulwinder.
Don't blame yourself. Nobody can stop these fools.
She took a moment to look around the room.
I thought the brothers had more respect than to break in and destroy things like this, especially in the Gurdwara.
Kulwinder crouched to the floor to pick up a folder, and noticing its contents were soggy, she recoiled. The acrid smell of urine wafted to her nostrils. She stepped back to the doorway and felt a surprising sting of tears in her eyes. She wiped them away furiously. Manjeet had a point. The brothers were capable of vandalizing the cars and homes of women gone astray, but temple grounds were sacred. From this distance, Kulwinder could see that everything had been tossed around a bit too deliberately, as if to give the impression of senseless vandalism.
Did they even find the stories? Manjeet asked.
Kulwinder shook her head slowly.
You're right. I can't imagine the brothers doing this.
Then who?
Kulwinder was about to reply when the open desk drawer caught her attention again. It was completely empty, unlike the others. It was a right-hand second drawer, the only contents of which had been Nikki's CV and job application. She recalled clearing that drawer of its dusty old files after Nikki applied for the job, pleased to have her own official paperwork to store away. Corwinda searched the floor. The CV, the application, Nikki's personal particulars.